Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem PPW share number 123. That's Ba'is Pnimi share for women, share number 123. We're going to talk today about the highs and lows of love. This is the truth about love by someone named Pat Love. Post-rapture, second stage of love, which we explained that when you have that infatuation stage, nature's love potion lowers the fences. All of a sudden, you're comfortable talking and listening and touching and being touched and being thoughtful, asking for help, receiving help, expressing thoughts, expressing feelings, spending private time together, being sensual, being sexual, being intimate, and being, in other words, this concept in that stage, to be intimate, to feel a natural high, that's normal in that stage. But after the effects of that wanes, you go back to your former behavior. All of a sudden, the introvert that sounded like an extrovert in that infatuation stage, talking more and being more expressive, all of a sudden is talking less. All of a sudden, the practical person of the couple that used to bring flowers and write doodle notes, all of a sudden stops doing that. All of a sudden, time is of the essence. All of a sudden, it's back to business. All of a sudden, you're catching part of your life that you neglected from the point you met. There's now these friends that you need to visit. There's duties you need to perform. There's demands of work. And back to business, basically. And these changes are understandable. They're normal. But they come still with a disappointment. A low spot in the relationship. This happens, again, usually in Shana Rishayna itself after a couple of months. Common sense tells you it's a loving relationship. Common sense tells you that there's normal highs and lows. You may even been taught this by your chassan and kala teacher. But nevertheless, when that low time does come, there's always a feeling, of concern. Because a loving relationship is so connected to our sense of security, so when there's a change to it, or there's a threat to it, it creates an anxiety. And everyone handles it differently. There's different ways people handle this tension and anxiety when they feel that feeling goes away and they feel less connected. It's either fight or flight, generally. Either you take action or you withdraw. When the low spot comes, you may manage your disappointment. And here's the two words that are used a lot in attachment theory. Common basic sense, common sense words. Either you pursue or distance. You manage your disappointment by pursuing or by distancing. Those are two classic ways to manage your anxiety when you feel there's something off. When in reality, you're not off at all. So, here is an example of it. Couple, Marla is the woman, Jack's the husband. Marla gets concerned about their relationship. She moves closer to Jack. She's a pursuer. She wants more time from him. I want more attention. More information. Pursuers will talk more. They'll ask more questions. They'll be very highly sensitive when they feel ignored or rejected. Ironically, though, the sad part is the more they pursue, if they do it out of anxiety, if it's anxiety-ridden pursuing, it evokes rejection. It creates the behavior that they fear the most from their spouse. Because the distancer, the other one, will do the opposite. So Marla is pursuing. Jack, who's the husband, he is a distancer. When he gets anxious, he becomes quiet. And he starts to focus on something else. And he needs time alone. Or can even ignore the problems. Distancers want to go at their own speed, which is never fast enough for a pursuer. They're very highly sensitive to any action that feels like being controlling. So a pursuer does not want to control. They're just anxious and they want their husband or wife to communicate. But the distancer feels controlled. The problem is by them distancing, it invites that control. The more you distance, the more the other one wants to control you. So it becomes a vicious cycle. And this pursuing / distancing behavior shows up when you're in this post-rapture stage. It's the pursuer style that they're going to complain and fetch and nag. The distancer style is to withdraw. And the basic advice for both is like this. The way she puts it is very, very blunt. Pursuers need to shut up, and distances need to show up. Which means that a pursuer has to fight their tendency. They're anxious because they feel a distance, but they need to learn. I'm going to be more accepting. I'm going to show more patience. I'm going to focus on the positive side of the relationship. I have a tendency, because of this anxiety of feeling this distance, to criticize and to nag and to whine or to complain. I'm not going to do that. Because if I do that, I will drive my husband or wife who's the distance or further away. And if you want to remove out of the vicious pattern of this struggle, you show appreciation for what is given. On the distances side, they tend to be rigid, they stonewall, they resist, they minimize problems, and they need to fight that tendency. Distancers need to speak up when they're not happy. They need to be forthcoming with the time and attention. They have to come out of their shell. The distancer needs to come out of their shell, and the pursuer needs to pull back and go a little within. They have to sort of like switch roles in a certain way. The natural pursuer needs to calm down, tone down. The distancer needs to put effort. It refers to also in the sexual intimate level too. One withdraws, the other one is more aggressive, and there needs to be a balance with that, working with your natures and sometimes against your natures for the best, what's best in the marriage. So that's very, very important. So while in the infatuation stage, you focus more on your husband or wife's positive characteristics and you ignore the negative, and you saw things with rose-colored glasses very often. And even when the negative trait came up, you gave it a positive spin. Oh, it's cute, it's adorable, it shows courage or whatever. Now that it's post-rapture stage, like they say, the honeymoon's over, no euphoria anymore. Now the negative traits are more evident, getting more on your nerves. Be more hypersensitive to it. You'll zoom in on it more. So this is the idea. So here's an example that she says. Susan grew up with a controlling stepfather and a mother who did little to protect her against his overbearing attitude and strict rules. When Susan married Julian, who had a 5-year-old daughter, many of the arguments between him and Susan came from Susan's belief that Julian let his ex-wife control their family. If Julian had any contact with his ex, despite the fact that it was only an arrangement about their child, Susan went ballistic. And after a particularly nasty argument, the two of them sat down through tears and anguish. Susan began to share with Julian what it was like as a child to live with a controlling person with whom she had no power against. Now, understanding her past helped Julian to be more sensitive to Susan's needs to be involved with all the decisions that affected their family. And his sensitivity and support enabled Susan to see that his ex-wife's involvement was just normal in a stepfamily situation. And it was not threatening to their relationship at all. So very often, painful pasts and triggers, if you're aware of it and that's what's happening, and your spouse becomes aware of it, they'll become less upset about it. They'll be more understanding of it. So as an example, unfortunately, if a let's say a husband growing up, he had parents where he knew his father was cheating on his mother, Cholila, with infidelity. His father w basically was not faithful to his mother. They were married, he knew about it, and it caused a lot of pain. Now this person living in this family who had a father that behaved this way and a mother who was extremely hurt by this marries somebody. This wife is totally faithful, totally Ehrlich, totally behaving properly. But anytime she needs to interact with whatever it is, with any male that she needs to in a normal type of situation, he goes crazy. He goes ballistic. He becomes extremely jealous to a point of disruption and anger and possessiveness and control. Now, what's triggering this? It's an overreaction. What's triggering this is the hurt and betrayal he felt what his father did to his mother. And he extrapolating his father's behavior on his wife, which is very unfair. He doesn't even realize that he's doing this. He needs to work through it and understand it. And when he does and realizes his wife is not his father, his wife is faithful, Ehrlich and Menschlich, he'll know how to calm his crazy bouts of jealousy and rage. So you see, this is where, on one hand, to blame everything on childhood is like you're throwing away responsibility. You got to grow up and work on yourselves. But you can't discount real trauma that comes from these things and to work through it. Not as an excuse, of course. Not to say my father was unfaithful, who knows what. So I have a right to be upset and enraged all my life towards my wife. That is not right. He has to work on himself. But the understanding of it indeed does help. So this is the idea. You know, if you criticize, you have to hold back from criticizing. If you nag, you have to pull back on your nagging. Otherwise, you're the one you're nagging is just going to procrastinate and avoid you. So this second stage of love, which for most of you listening, you're in there because the feeling moved away for the most part because of the challenges of life, then you basically, here's an opportunity to recognize there's nothing inherently really wrong in your relationship other than trying to access each other's good points, being patient and loving with each other. And without this influence with the chemical love cocktail, without the infatuation chemicals being there, you can, with your work, get to a much deeper, more loving, more fiery, but more deep, meaningful place. Which, when you look back, you'll realize this compared to the highs of infatuation, that was superficial compared to what we have now. That is the idea. Look at positive things, even in the low times. Develop skills that you and your wife, you and your husband, can do to build on each other. What activities do you enjoy together? What goals do you share together? What memories from that infatuation stage could you access? If you never had it, how do you develop those feelings and those emotions? Real love has natural highs and lows. That's what it is. It's just the way it is. And Avodas Hashem, it works the same way. People fall off a lot because they have this yush, this spear. I had a high and I don't have it and I lost it. You didn't lose it. It's dormant and it could be rekindled. You did not lose it. You and your husband have great potential. You probably don't know each other that well. And I will say again, many of you who may have been married a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades, and think you know everything about your husband based on outside behaviors, you predict even what they're going to say, you don't really know him. And he probably doesn't know you. And that's a shame. But with understanding what real love is, high ins and lows, and trying to be curious about each other, and working with each other, and trying to develop accessing the goodness within each other, it'll take you to a level that you never experienced before. Each low spot will strengthen your love. Each lull in the relationship will deepen your satisfaction when you get to that point. This is something not to give up, not on a physical level, not on a spiritual level, and not on an emotional level. You keep at it, till you become Matzliach Habol Etayer Messiah Noisai. Yes, this is Habol Etayer and Messiah Noisai. And Hashem will bench you all with a tremendous amount of success. Bracha v'atzlacha.